You are listening to the sound of celebration in California, and those are opponents of Proposition 8. A federal judge has called the 2008 ballot measure, which defines marriage as between one man and one woman, unconstitutional. Those who had supported the ban were not exactly singing in the streets.
I do feel like I live in a dictatorship now, that my vote doesn't count. My vote basically didn't matter. Why did I go out to the polls and vote for Prop 8 when one unelected judge can just overturn that?
So what happens now in the culture wars when the courts and the legislatures and the voters all weigh in? Who actually gets the last word? We're here with Kenji Yoshino, a professor of constitutional law at New York University, and he's been watching the gay marriage wars for years. Good morning again.
Good morning.
Okay, let's just recap here. This has been the longest and most circuitous route, starting back with the mayor of San Francisco and getting gay marriage going in California.
He actually started marrying people.
He started marrying people in San Francisco, and then it went to the California Supreme Court. Then it was a ballot measure, and now it's a federal judge. Is it over?
By no means, no. This will be appealed to the Ninth Circuit, and then ultimately will probably wend its way to the Supreme Court in about 2 years.
Do you believe this will wind up being the law of the land? Is this going to determine what happens in this country?
I'm not sure if this particular case will, because there are ways in which the Supreme Court could dispose of this that would be California specific. For instance, it could say that California is the only state that has some people who are same-sex couples who are already married, those 18,000 couples who already got married.
They got married in that window between the Supreme Court decision in the state of California and the Prop 8 decision, which was the later on that year.
Exactly.
And the Prop 8 ballot measure, became a law.
Right. Exactly. So there was that window between June and November of that year in which people could get married, 18,000 same-sex couples availed themselves of that right. So the Supreme Court could just say, look, there's an equal protection violation here when some people are married in the state and others aren't. California is the only state that has that disparity, so the Supreme Court could just do it in California grounds alone.
So
on the other hand, it could flip the nation, you know, so we just don't know. I mean, the Supreme Court could say,
Let's talk about the specifics about this. The judge wrote a 138-page decision, and here I want to quote from it. This is the gist of it. Quote, Proposition 8 fails to advance any rational basis in singling out gay men and lesbians for denial of a marriage license. So what was so irrational that he's talking about?
Well, many of the rationales that were offered by the state just didn't pass muster. So let me just give some examples. First of all, the state said that marriage had always been defined as being between one man and one woman. And that obviously is just tautological. It's circular to just say marriage is defined as X, and so therefore it will always be X.
Right.
Second, they said it's always been one way, and so change should come incrementally. And, you know, that in itself is a little bit of a contradiction. But let's look at the history of marriage. Marriage has been an extremely changeful institution. So to say that marriage has always been one way is to ignore that we used to ban interracial marriage, that, you know, when women were married to their husbands, they used to be legally merged under the doctrine of coverture into one legal entity. So marriage has changed a lot over
history. The husband and the wife are one, and that one is the husband.
Although,
go ahead, John.
There is a conflict here between the doctrine of a cultural doctrine, that of marriage, and a cultural history, and a legal doctrine, that is, what does the federal government get to dictate to the states? This rational standard that comes in the decision, does the Supreme Court have the ability to rule on any state ballot measure and decide whether it's rational or not, or does it have to meet more strict standards than that?
So that's an excellent question. A lot turns on this word rational, which is actually a term of art in constitutional law. So it used to be that rational meant that so long as the state legislation was framed in grammatically complete sentences, the Supreme Court would not review it. There was a high degree of deference
there. There's some decisions in this Supreme Court which suggests that they take that view, that if the states want to do it, the states can do it.
But in recent years, John, what we've been seeing is a shift in the doctrine. So that rational, at least in some context, means what we scholars call rational basis with bite, which is to say the court will scrutinize under rational basis standards, which is ostensibly a very deferential standard, some classifications more closely. So things like sexual orientation, things like disability, certain protected classes are going to get a harder look. Right. So what's funny about the jurisprudence is that it frames itself as a jurisprudence that takes looks or examines things rather than comes to results. But this is a jurisprudence in which looks can kill. How closely you look will will determine whether or not the legislation survives.
So professor at New York University, as you can hear, Kenji Yoshino, professor of constitutional law.
Let's listen now to a couple of to the two sides in this. The first clip is from a plaintiff in the case. She is a lesbian.
With this decision, the system worked. Our courts are supposed to protect our constitutional rights. Today, they did. Today, every American should be proud.
Okay, that's one way to look at this decision. Here is something from the chair of the National Organization for Marriage, which of course supported Proposition 8.
We believe that Judge Walker has conducted a biased trial that has telegraphed his personal desire to preside over a so-called historic trial.
Not surprising, Kenji, to hear one side, the winning side, saying, oh, it was rational, pardon me, that I know that it was a reasonable decision, and the other side saying, oh, but it was all about what he wanted. So where do we go on this now?
Well, let me just respond to two of the earlier quotes in this program. One was, my vote doesn't count, and
right.
So therefore I live in a dictatorship.
Right.
This to me is absurd. Yeah. His vote did count in the sense that the ballot measure did pass. The only reason that the judge superseded the ballot measure was because it came into conflict with a yet superior doctrine called the United States Constitution. We have a United States Constitution that has a supremacy clause that says that the United States Constitution is the supreme law of the land. So he doesn't live in a dictatorship. He lives in a constitutional democracy. So first of all, let's just put that to one side. With respect to the quotation about I've looked through the entire Constitution and I haven't seen anything about same-sex marriage, the Maggie Gallagher quote, that is either really disingenuous or really ignorant, you know, in the sense that the Constitution does not frame the right to marry anywhere in its text. And so if she's saying that only things that are explicitly found in the Constitution are going to be protected, then she herself would not have the right to marry somebody.
And
the
this argument will go on. We will keep the conversation going here. What's your take on the court ruling? Reach us. Call us 877-8-MY-TAKE, 877-869-8253.
Thanks, Kenji.
Thank you.
Kenji Yoshino, professor of constitutional law at New York University.